All right, let's continue here in the Mar Nevuchim, Chelek Shlishi, Perek Yud Ches. So last time we were doing the end of Yud Zayin, where the Rambam expresses his idea, as opposed to the, what he calls the Das Torah. And we were saying that it's focusing, that the difference, I would definitely recommend, take a look at Shem Tov in the old... the old translation. So he has a lot more of the difference between the Rambam, the Das HaHei, as opposed to the Rambams. But essentially, I think he's correct. The difference is whether it's a universal hashgacha to Adam as a min, or if it's a particular hashgacha per each person's level of perfection, okay? Because the hashgacha, he's saying, is really commensurate. Hashgachas on Adam, which is commensurate with the person's das, because it's a function of his... Shefa, the Shefa HaLoki, the so to speak, the relationship he has to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through his Das. And that's why Adam is unique, and for that very same reason, each person is different. Okay, and he's really, in this next chapter, he's basically just expanding on this distinction. Okay, let's go through it though. 1 second. All right, so the Rambam is like this. Yeah, okay, we'll read it in the Friedlander. Having shown in the preceding chapter that of all living beings, mankind alone is directly under the control of divine providence, I will now add the following remarks. Okay, so we have to think through what exactly is adding. It is an established fact that the species have no existence except in our own minds. And that's a pretty amazing statement, right? He's saying that. Over here, he says, "Noda kvar ki kvar noda she'ein chutz laseichel min nimtza." So, although we talk about the reality of ideas and concepts, right? And species, the idea of the reality of a species is a reality of a concept. It would seem, right? We have a universal idea that is kollel all of the particulars. But the Rambam was making a point over here that in terms of existence, I have to think about this again, he says, it is an established fact that species have no existence except in our own minds. Species and other classes are merely ideas formed in our minds, while everything in real existence is an individual object or an aggregate of individual objects. So, we can talk about the species of zebras, right? He's saying, but is there, what does that really mean? What do we really mean by that? So, he's saying, does that mean that there's a reality, an actual existence that we can call the species of zebra? Or is it just there are individual animals, and our mind looks at them and extrapolates a universal common form that we see over and over again in each individual one, and we say that there's a similarity there's a certain underlying similarity between them. They all have the same essential cause of existence. Okay, but he's saying, but the actual existence is only in the particulars. I'll read to you how Shem Tov puts it. He's like this.
Species of people? Animals or species of people?
Everything he's saying.
What about a family? Does a family exist?
Well, what do you mean by exist? I mean the relationships are true, but those are...
They have halachic validity.
Halachic validity? Well,
a family has a halakha of validity. Somebody has to sit and do a Vedas for somebody in their family.
Well, it's true that a person is born from a woman, and that woman was impregnated by a man, and they might have had other children. I mean, those are all facts. Those are all true, right? So, but he's saying, is there such a thing as a species zebra in existence? Can I say that there is a reality to the existence of the species alone? Or is it just an extrapolation? Like, I see all of these things, and I say there is something that unifies them. There's a unifying concept. And I call that unifying concept the species. But is there an existence to it? In other words, is there one, let's put it this way, is there one thing that, what do we mean by saying if something exists? Let's start there, okay? What do we mean by something existing, right? Means to say, let me read you how Shem Tov puts it, okay? He says it like this. Hinia hakdoma rishona. Okay, so he's telling you where the Ram is going with this. So after he tells you that Hashkocha is particular to the species of man, okay, Omar kvar noda she'ein chutz la'seichel min nimtza. Let's put that. He's saying, aside for the mind, outside of the realm of the mind, there's no reality to a species. Meaning to say, what generates what we call species? It's an analysis of the mind. But there's no particular object that I can point to and say that is the species zebra. I can point to a collection of animals, and with my mind, I can say I'm universalizing something. That idea exists, but where does that idea exist? In my mind. That idea exists in my mind. Okay. Now, there is something real within each zebra that exhibits similar characteristics. And there is a shared lineage, like Howie's saying. But those are expressed in the individuals. As existences, they are in the individuals. And Shem Tov puts it a little more clearly. He says, he's like this, ki amin hu kolel, velo nimtza kolel chutz l'seichel. Amin is a collection, is an abstraction, right? It's a universal, it's a category. But where does the category exist? The category exists in the mind. Ki ha kolel hu dover lokho ha-seichel me'ish acher. That was the kolel is something that the mind takes from the individual. Ba'ofen she'yilkach me'ruven me'hus ha'anushas. You look at Reuven and you say, what's the definition of man? V'zeh omro ha'anushis hu mishutaf v'divrei rabim. V'zeh hu ha'yoso kolel. Ki Reuven derech moshel lo yishve lo Shimon. So Reuven is not going to be identical to Shimon. V'lo yimotze b'shum ish. So you'll never find manhood, you'll never find mankind in one individual. Because then it's not going to exist anywhere else. If I say, well, Reuven, as an individual, is man, right? Well, then nobody's exactly like Reuven. Then nobody else is going to be man, right? So he says, V'zeh omro, yeah, she'ha'anushis hu meshutaf l'dvarim rabim.
So you have to say that Reuven partakes of man.
That's right. V'zehu hayoso kolel. That's the klal. I'm sorry, I skipped the line. He says, Oval v'sheyilkach ha'seichel mahus Reuven shehu ha'anushis meshutaf me'hamikrim. I'm sorry, mufshat me'hamikrim. If you take a look at Reuven and you think about what makes him man and you strip it from its accidents, v'zehu hayoso kolel. Then you'll get down to the klal. You get down and take a look at man, take a look at an individual, and I try to take away the particular accidents of this particular, and then I can arrive at some concept of man, right? Now it's going to have to be the universal. It's going to have to be the thing that exists in all the particulars, right? Joined to those accidental features, but is really the same in each one. But that doesn't exist anywhere, right? So the existence of the class is something that the mind extrapolates from the individual existences. Okay.
Can't you say the table is also a frame of reference?
He says, because outside of the mind, you'll never find something without accidental qualities. Right? Outside, only the mind has that, only within the mind can you envision, or I don't know exactly what the right word is, but contemplate, yeah, a stripped down essence. Right? I mean, if I say the word dog to you, you can have a little image in your mind? Well, that's not the right... that's dog with a capital D. But just regular dog.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so he says like this.
I meant Mini West.
Mini, right. V'zen nimsa v'seichel.
Without the name of the
dog? V'zen nimsa v'seichel. Mikra miyuchadim. Im kein. Kol ma shenimsa chutz l'seichel. Omnom heim ishei hasugim haminim. Okay, so those are the particulars of the species. But species itself, we don't say exists in a real way apart from the individuals. There's no existence like that. Okay, now
it's deep.
He said like this, but he says, "Rasulam haseicha." I'm sorry. Yeah. So back in the English one, he says like this: species and other classes are merely ideas formed in our minds, while everything in reality, in real existence, is an individual object or an aggregate of individual objects. That's what you were saying. Right, a collection of tables. This being granted, it must further be admitted that the result of the existing divine influence that reaches mankind through the human intellect is identical with individual intellects really in existence. In which, for instance, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe are endowed. I translated the translation in there. Okay. So, what does he have in the Hebrew? So, yeah. So that's his point, right? That there's no... You can't... Once we're going to talk about the fact that that the Hashkacha reaches man by way of his Seichel, by way of his... Oh, he changes it to Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. Okay. To the way of his Seichel...
I have Zayed Amr.
I know. I guess Ibn Tibbon decided to translate them into Hebrew names. But he says, once you're going to say that man, that the Hashkacha that relates to man, relates to man through his Seichel, okay, and now he's saying there's no such thing as a universal man or a universal Seichel. And the reality of mind is individual, right? The reality of mind is an individual phenomenon. So therefore, he says, it must be admitted, right, that the result of the existing divine influence that reaches mankind through the human intellect has to be identical with the individual. Okay? He says, hence it follows, in accordance with what I have mentioned in the preceding chapter, that the greater the share in which a person has obtained of this divine influence on account of both his physical predisposition and his training, the greater must also be the effect of divine providence upon him. For the action of divine providence is proportional to the endowment of intellect, as has been mentioned above. He's trying to expand on what he said before, because the end of the last chapter was that the species of man is unique because it has intellect, Right? In the end, the last chapter says, why should God select mankind as the object of his special providence? For he who asks this question must also inquire, why has man alone of all species been endowed with intellect? The answer to this second question will be according to the three aforementioned theories. So therefore he says the same answer applies to the first question. In other words, why is man selected, why did God select mankind as the object of his special providence? Because man as a species, he says, has intellect. He says, but you have to realize when we say as a species, that just means a collection of individuals. Right? But since it's the intellect, and the interaction with the ideas through the intellect that Hashgacha is operating, since it's through that, then there's no such thing in reality as an entity of species. You can't treat man as one class, because the phenomenon that this Hashgacha is based upon is in reality exists only in individuals. And therefore, it must be commensurate with the reality as it's expressed in each person. There's no such thing as a reality of the min of the seichel of min anushi. Min anushi has seichel means that man is a collection of individuals with intellectual capacity. But if you're going to say that the hashkacha is in response to that fact, that faculty, then it must be on an individual level.
Yeah.
So the question is Hashgacha to the Am. That's a different story. We'll come back to that. That's not what he's talking about.
The question is, does that have a reality?
Let's go a little further. Okay. Because the problem that presents itself over here also is the Rambam did say earlier that there is Hashgacha on the other creation, on the other creatures, in terms of the species. Right? In the previous chapter, he says we agree with Aristotle, or we have a similar idea that it's going to be chance in terms of the other divine providence is connected with divine intellectual influence, right? But he said in terms of the other animals, they're just the providence is just in terms of the species, right? The view that other living beings are only governed by divine providence in the way described by Aristotle is supported by the words of Habakkuk. But that means to say there is some divine providence in terms of the species. But now he's saying there's no such thing as a species. Even a species of animals is no such thing as a species, right? All these passages on 288 refer to providence in relation to species and not to providence in relation to individual animals. Okay, but what's true for man is going to have to be true for the animals too. If there's no such thing as a species of man, there's no such thing as a species of animals. Okay, so we have to explain how he still is maintaining this idea of species, of hashgacha to species by animals, when he's saying there can't be any reality of a species other than in the mind of man. So let's just go a little further, because he does talk about it a little bit more. So let's continue like this. The relation of divine providence is therefore not the same to all men. The greater the human perfection a person has attained, the greater the benefit he derives from divine providence. This benefit is very great in the case of prophets. Now keep this in mind, because it's going to become important when we get eventually to the Eov question. So he says, the benefit is very great in the case of prophets and varies according to the degree of their prophetic faculty, as it varies in the case of pious and good men, according to their piety and uprightness. Okay, so they're saying the Navi, though, represents the highest level. For everybody, it's true, but it's going to be very great in the case of the prophets, because the nature of a prophet is, the concept of a prophet is one who has perfected his faculties to the highest degree. But it's also true, of course, for the other people, according to their piety. Prophet is sort of like the apex. For it is the intensity of the divine intellectual influence that has inspired the prophets, guided the good in their actions, and perfected the wisdom of the pious. In the same proportion as ignorant and disobedient persons are deficient in that divine influence. Now the question is like this. What about the Rishayim, or the people who disregard their divine influence. So he says their condition is inferior. and their rank equal to that of irrational beings. See, it's interesting. The Ram doesn't really seem to have like an idea of onesh for disregarding the intellect. There is a sort of you sort of become entered into a realm of divine, of a divine relationship when you actualize your Tzelem Elokim, which is the connection, so to speak, to the divine. Then you're put on a level of judgment, right? Like Moshe is judged very strictly. Like that's what we say in general. The greater a tzaddik, the greater his, the stricter his judgment's going to be. And that's going to be for the good. He'll have divine, he'll have hashgacha to protect him, but he'll also be subject to onesh. Okay? But a guy who is just not engaging his mind at all is not the subject of hashgacha. You understand? That would be, if you would say that the man who is not engaging his mind is the subject of hashgacha, you'd be falling back into the trap of saying mankind as a species is subject to schar v'onesh. And mankind, on the whole, is the object of God's judgment. And if you're good, you'll be judged good. And if you're bad, you'll be judged for evil. But that, again, is putting man as a whole class set aside for this special review before God of judgment. But that, the Ram says, is open to other problems. Why man? Why should man be so special? And you see a lot of things don't seem to be working out so well for everybody. So we'll have to get to those questions, I guess, a little later. But his point over here is that's what he characterizes as the fifth view, the, so to speak, layman's approach, view of Torah, the conventional idea of what Torah is, of Torah's idea, that mankind is said. But his personal view of what Torah is, obviously, is that there's a certain madrega that a person, because of his intellectual, because of his actualizing his cognition and his and actualizing his Tzelem Elokim, which is itself the recipient of the divine influence that is unique to man, that's what distinguishes him for a special existence before God. But if you don't, then you are simply left to be like the, what is he calling them? Like the irrational beings. And they are like unto the beasts, right? That's kebehemos nidmu. Yeah. He says, that's the pasuk. The other people, he's almost hasicholim hamamrim kfi mashe chosru min hashefa hahu. They're lacking. So they are sha'ar mine sha'ar ishe mine ba'lechaim nimshal kabehemos nidmu. Okay, and then he goes further. He says, for this reason, it was not only considered a light thing to slay them. Okay. He says, For this reason, it was not only considered a light thing to slay them, but it was even directly commanded for the benefit of mankind. So he's saying it's a dover kal to kill a person who has no intellectual achievement, because he's basically living like an animal. And not only that, he says it's kal lahargam aval tziva bo l'toeles. But God didn't just say wipe out anyone who's not living like an adam. For specific purposes, it was commanded. All right, meaning the Shiva Amim, things like that. This belief that God provides for every individual human being in accordance with his merits is one of the fundamental principles on which the law is founded. Consider how the action of divine providence...
What does that mean? Can I go against what you just said?
Which part? He says...
He means those who use...
V'zeh ha'inyan hu, pina mi pina satora ve'oleha...
Oh, human being. Pina. In other words, he's not as opposed to a rational.
Right.
Right.
You have to start with the intellect.
Hashgacha b'ish ish mi b'nei adam, right, kifi mashehu. Okay, but he goes a little bit further. He explains a little more what it means. Consider how the action, so then he goes, it depends on his merits, okay, in accordance with his merits. But again, it doesn't mean if he doesn't merit, he gets a negative Ashgacha. Right? It just means that connection will be stronger depending on your relationship to the Yediyas, to the knowledge of God.
So he'd be in the chance if he's...
Exactly. Okay. Consider how the action of the divine providence is described in reference to every incident in the lives of the patriarchs, to their occupations, and even to their passions. Right? So he probably means like by Yehuda, right? The Ram says that was considered like when he had a taiva for Tamar. That was all, everything over there is part of his the hashgacha for them.
What does that mean?
He's saying
he's not responsible for that then?
No, it wasn't. That wasn't a chait. He didn't sin for that. To have relations with Tamar. Ram says that it wasn't a sin.
Well, was it a sin or it wasn't free will? I mean, like, what is...
Well, was it free will? He had a desire. I mean, it was like a mala.
It was hashgacha.
Yeah. He's saying
which
that... Well, I mean, the normal person is going to react in a normal way to a normal desire. So, I mean, was he forced to do that? No. But this Ram...
I mean, it was set up?
It was set up. Right.
Set up in a good way.
Right.
It's tomorrow.
Okay.
So he says,
for the sake of shift core.
Right. He says, Biskeyem, Bishimushayem, Ad Mikneim Vikinyonam. Okay. He doesn't say passions in the Hebrew. In English he says it. Right, but the Ram talks about it elsewhere. I don't remember exactly. Anyway, so he said like this. Yeah. Thus God said to Abraham, I am thy shield. Isaac, I will be with you, and I will bless you. And to Yaakov, I am with you, and I will keep you. To Moses, the chief of the prophets, certainly I will be with you, and this shall be a token unto you. To Yahushua, I will be with you, as I was with Moshe. It is clear that in all these cases, the action of providence has been proportional to man's perfection. Okay. Meaning they represented the height of perfection. And Ram explained, I think in the last chapter, we were discussing how every element of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov's life, their lives were just Avodas Hashem, and that's their whole preoccupation was to be Marbitz, the reality of God, and therefore everything, in all of their actions, they were still related to these ideas. That's what I spoke about in the shir I gave, that you can be constantly involved in the reality of Hashem, and even if you're not always expressing the idea, as long as you're acting in line with the reality of that knowledge. So that's what their lives was all about, was enacting that reality. And therefore, even when they were taking care of sheep, even when they were doing what seemed to be mundane kinyanim, it was all part of, they were all still constantly under the in the presence of the reality of God. And therefore, part of this expression of Hashgacha. The following verse describes how providence protects good and pious men and abandons fools. Okay, so it's all like this. It says, he says, Ragle chasidav yishmor urushoyim bachoshech yidmu ki lo bakoach yigvar ish. Okay. So he will keep the feet of his saints, and the wicked shall be silent in darkness, for by strength shall no man prevail. When we see that some men escape plagues and mishaps, while others perish by them, right? And that was what he was talking about with the boat, right? We must not attribute this to a difference in their properties, in the properties of their bodies. That's by strength no man shall prevail, okay? So no one's going to prevail simply because of the strength of their body or in their physical constitution. For by strength no man shall prevail. But it must be attributed to their different degrees of perfection. Some approaching God while others moving away from Him. Those who approach Him are best protected, and He will keep the feet of His saints. But those who keep far away from Him are left exposed to what may befall them. There is nothing that could protect them from what might happen. They are like those who walk in darkness, right? That is, they are bachoshech yidnu, right? They're like those who walk in darkness. Yeah. And are certain to stumble. That's the interesting part, though. Why I say they're certain to stumble. The protection of the... Yeah. So he says, he means to say, in the shame, though, it doesn't mean they're definitely going to stumble. It means according to whatever nature has in line for them. In other words, they can't overpower nature with their goof. Whatever is the natural order, they have to succumb to. That they can't lo bekoach yigvar ish. So if the natural order says they have to encounter this calamity, then they'll be like a person walking in the darkness who's definitely going to stumble into that thing. Right? You know what I mean? Good. The protection of the pious by providence is also expressed by the following passages. He keeps all his bones. The eyes of the Lord are upon the upright, upon the righteous. He shall call upon me and I shall answer him. There are in Scripture many more passages expressing the principle that men enjoy divine protection in proportion to their perfection and piety. And then he says, this is also expressed by the philosophers. Now consider how by this method of reasoning we arrived at the truth taught by the prophets that every person has his individual share of divine providence in proportion to his perfection. For philosophical research leads to this conclusion. If we assume, as has been mentioned above, that the divine providence is in each case proportional to the person's intellectual development. So as long as you move away from the idea of the species, of some just, of the man as a species, is going to be judged in the whole, and you realize that it has to do with his intellectual perfection, and that is an individualistic phenomenon, therefore it must be like he's saying. It is wrong to say that divine providence extends only to the species and not to individual beings, as some of the philosophers teach. For only individual beings have real existence, and individual beings are endowed with divine intellect. Divine providence acts, therefore, upon these individual beings. Now, let's just finish and we'll come back. Study this chapter as it ought to be studied. Okay, you will find in it all the fundamental principles of the law, of the Torah. You will see that these are in conformity with philosophical speculation, and all difficulties will be removed. You will have a clear idea of divine providence.
Is there an answer to Tzadik V'Ra'lo?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet. Everything but Tzadik V'Ra'lo. But basically, but he keeps saying this over and over again, that the species of animals does seem to be endorsing the idea that there's an idea of hashgacha for the species of the animals. But he keeps coming back and saying, but there's no such thing as species, so that's why every man has to be individual. What does he mean by the species of animals?
What does he mean by hashgacha for the species of animals?
Exactly. What does he mean by hashgacha for the species of animals?
What is it supposed to... Forget the individual for species. Like, what is it like? Existence?
Okay, good. Very good. Very good.
What does he mean when he says we see that some men escape plague and mishaps, while others are perished by them? We must attribute this to a difference in the properties of their bodies.
We must not attribute it to the difference of the bodies.
We must not attribute this to the different properties in their bodies, right? But attribute it to the degree of perfection some approaching God while others move away from him. So that means only Chachamim escape these problems?
We're lucky people.
But he doesn't say we're lucky people. He says, must be attributed to different degrees of perfection. Some approaching God while others moving away from him.
But then what does he say? And he says, like this. Those who approach him, right, are best protected, and he will keep the feet of his saints, but those who keep far from him are left exposed to what may befall them. Now it means like this, but there is nothing that can protect them from what might happen.
But they might escape.
That's whatever basically is under the natural, whatever the, so to speak, natural order has in store for them is what is in store for them. Ein mazal Yisrael, right? It means to say, if a person is existing on the plane of Yisrael, or maybe we'll talk about Klal Yisrael in a minute, then they're not under the Mareches HaShemayim, to use an old term. But if you're under the Mareches HaShemayim, you can't fight it. Can't fight the tape, right? You can't fight the Merachas HaShemayim. So whatever is, so to speak, I don't want to say necessarily fated for you, but in those, in whatever system of cause and effect that we have, that we operate in this world, you can't escape that. That's it. He's going to be, if the
if he walks away, it's not because of Ashgacha.
That's not being saved, right? Is it possible for a person to walk away? Yeah. Just like Ram says, this if the dung from this cow landed on this fly and killed it, and that fly escaped, it wasn't because this fly was a Russia and that fly was a Tzaddik. It just happens to be that was the natural order.
In the case of the boat.
It means to say, let's put it this way, the Rama just means to say, it
there's
seems, if you take...
course of a storm.
We cannot... Right, the storm takes effect, no matter what. The ship is going down. That's in the cards, let's say. Okay?
Who's on it?
Who's on it? Well, there's two frameworks. There's the natural order of who's on it. And then there are... And it depends on what level of... There are rats on the boat. Right? There are going to be... animals on the boat. There are going to be people that look like animals on the boat. Right? Or I should say, animals look like people, I should say. There's going to be... but he's saying... Right? Not, we're not talking about the mice and recovery. That's a different story. Those are the animals that look like people. Those are the people that look like animals. Okay. Better stop saying that phrase. Can't get it right. But anyway... But he's saying what? He's saying you cannot say that who is on that boat is strictly determined by chance. In a certain sense, it's determined by Hashgacha. Because there'll be those people who, because of Hashgacha, are left to chance. And those people, because of Hashgacha, are maybe steered off of the boat. But maybe there's a tzaddik who's steered onto the boat. I don't know. We don't know that either. Now, of course, all of this is very... is philosophically interesting, but possible to test. But I mean, that's his conception of what's happening.
How is that clear?
So he's saying it's clear in the sense that he is explaining the. Let's put it all together. So he's saying like this. He's saying. Well, I think what we have to explain is the rest of creation, because that's the one thing we haven't discussed. And then maybe we can put it together. So I think what Ari is saying is right. And Shem Tov says a similar thing. He says like this, in terms of the rest of creation, what are we saying? He says like this. At the end, Shem Tov says, what are the main ideas? The Rambam says, in this chapter you have all of the main ideas of Torah. Right? So what are the main ideas? He says... Kvar yadata ki pinos asher haTorah ramaz bozeh harav hu she'adam bal yecholas ubechira lasos eiz davar sheyirta. So the first thing is, if a person is a bal bechira, has the ability to do what he wills. Vein sham monei avlo meik laosos tov o ra lios chacham osachol. There's nothing that forces him to be a chacham or osachol. So he's just going over the main things that Ram says. And then you have the second foundation corner is what? That Hashem lo yiyuchas bo ovel. We can't attribute to God any evil. Shlishis shehu pinas toras Moshe Rabbeinu. What's the third fundamental? Shehashgacha b'vnei adam kifi shleimusam umalusam. V'kasher yistakel ha-ma'ayan zeh ha-perek yushlemu pinos ha-Torah kulam. Those are the pillars of the Torah that are contained in this chapter. That man has bechira, and that he has the ability to make himself into a chacham or a sochel, that there's no evil that's attributable to God, and that a person is judged according to his shlemus and his mailus and his level. And he says, "Asher hayis shehayis ha'ashgacha kfi ha'shlemus sheyisron lechachma al hasichlos ki yisron ha'or min ha'choshach. The benefit of chachma over foolishness is like a light over darkness. V'yusulcha deos iunios philosophios. Okay. V'yisbar lucha tsuras ha'shkacha ve'echi v'hu ha'shkacha be'galgolem el ha'smodosam be'inyin shlo yishtane v'shofeya. May Ashkocha he Mashachayev Shar Ishe Aminim Vihasmadosam Bahem Shalahem Mitzias Meshubach. Now, as I was saying, in terms of the rest of creation, okay, the Hashkocha Bigalgolam, those are in terms of the universals, in terms of the I guess what they consider like the Marechas Hashemayim, you know, nature, is Hasmadosam. Now, is to keep them to keep them constant, okay? Shelo yishtana, that they don't change. And that is the hashkacha with regards to those things. Okay? Ma shechayev hashar ishi haminen vasmadosim b'mashem mitzias meshubach ki kol nimtza. Here's the part. Kol nimtza kevan shebo mitzias hanimtzahu. In everything that exists, the intention is its existence. And that's something that Ram talks about a lot, that you can't talk about the purpose of creation. Right? God is a bore, and as a creator, that is the purpose of creation is the existence itself, because existence is considered a good. Okay? Well, let's not go too far on that. But basically, you can't look for another tachlis. Okay, tachlis kol nimtza sheyimotze kefi mashehu b'tziyuro yisala. What's the objective? What's the tachlis of the existence? That it should exist in the form of that God conceived. V'yimoshech mizeh kiyum kol haminim ad amorkav ha'achron. So in terms of the animals, the nature, and all these other things, of course there's an idea of a min. I mean, the Torah talks about min, right? The Torah uses an expression in Brachos. They are different minim. But he's saying like this. He's saying the universal idea of Hashkacha is that which exists, that which God created in the form that it exists, should be maintained. Okay? Now, in terms of the other irrational elements of creation, is there such a thing as a species? Is there such a thing as a species? Is there? Does it exist? Oh no! Like, let's put it this way: there is a tachlis. Like the Ram says in the beginning. There's an idea of, in terms of mice of Brachos. There is an idea of that it is created in a way that it sustains its existence. So it has to have generations. It has to have the destruction and generation. Now, in order to maintain the order of creation, there needs to be a system of death and reproduction and all of that. Now, what is being maintained, though? What is there? What is the existence? Are you going to say it's just random collections of individual objects in a disarrayed chaos? Of course not. There is definitely an order of species. There definitely is a reality of, like Harry was saying, the collection of animals. Now, the Rambam's only point, I think his main point of introducing the idea of the individual as opposed to the species, is because he's trying to express the idea that in terms of Adam, since Adam is a Baal Seichel, okay, then you can't lump them together. Now, let's take the animals. Let's take zebras. So you're going to say, okay, it's true, the idea of the zebra doesn't exist in an absolute way apart from the collection, but they all are partaking of some similar concept. Right? They're all partaking of a universal. We just can't say the universal exists apart, as a separate existence, apart from any individual zebra. But we're not becoming, we're not saying that what the mind does is a fiction. We're not saying when the mind looks at the collection of animals and extracts out an idea that that's a non-reality, right? We're not becoming anti-intellectual I'm not becoming empiricists over here, right? So of course there's a reality of the species, but in the sense that each one is expressing in individual form an underlying concept, an underlying reality of tsura. Right? What's the tsuras hazebra? Well, there's a universal tsuras hazebra that is forming with each individual, and that is responsible for the species. Right? Now he's saying that reality, before God, so to speak, is nothing more than that phenomenon. There's nothing more to the species of zebra than the particular expression of that universal. Okay? That's what it means, that there should be a species of this animal. That there should be expressed one underlying concept in particular objects throughout generations and generations and generations. That's the whole tachlis. That's the only tachlis that we can speak about. That existence of that system of the particulars expressing one underlying universal. And in terms of maintaining that, that's the only thing that the Hashgacha relates to. It doesn't really relate to a quote-unquote species of zebra either. It has to be in terms of hashgachas, in terms of maybe one particular zebra will have to have something happen to ensure that the rest of the species will continue. But that's the only, in terms of the hasmoda, in terms of the continuance and the maintenance, the only idea that is maintained is that concept that the underlying tsura should have an eternal or a constant expression from individual to individual. Okay? But he's saying like this. What he's saying like this. He's saying, but that idea by man is not applicable. That idea by man is not applicable. Because by man, the essence of what man is the function of that faculty. And that function is unique to every individual. And in that sense, by man, you get a whole different phenomenon. You can't just say that man is an expression, that man... We can universalize all of the zebras because we'll say the essence of them is the same. Right? And that's a true statement. And that essence is the only thing that the Hashgacha is maintaining. Okay? But when you talk about man, each individual person has that intellectual capacity, and to the degree that he uses it, is actually differentiated from every other individual person, and therefore is no longer simply an anonymous expression or a particular expression of a greater universal idea. By man, the point is like this: by man, once the reality of Seichel is expressed in each individual, And it can be utilized by each individual to different degrees. That becomes like a new, that becomes now each person, vis-a-vis that faculty, is his own distinct existence. And it's sort of like, you can no longer talk about man who actualizes his intellect as a species. And they cannot be treated as simply the maintenance of one idea. Because your mind, perceiving the reality that you perceive, is completely unique from another person's mind perceiving the realities that he perceives. And he's no longer simply like two zebras that are expressing the exact same universal. Now, to the degree that man does express a universal, that's just like the animal side of him. Now, the point is like this. The Tsuras HaAdam of Adam is really something that man, so to speak, is not endowed with as much as actualizes. And to the degree that he's actualizing it, it's not simply an identical tzura. By a zebra, whatever he's given that makes him a zebra, he's given. And that's the same thing that every zebra has. And the only difference is the particular expression. Okay? But by Adam, let's say I have two people, two chachamim. Okay? You can't say that they are simply identical expressions of the same tzura that was implanted in them. Because the tzura that was implanted in them is not what they're exhibiting now. What they're exhibiting now is the perfection, their own perfection of that tzura into their own creation, into their own actualization. That's already an individual maisa. When I talk about the collection of the animals, it's because there's one cause that's basically responsible for all of the expressions. So in a certain sense, like how we were saying, you can talk about a family. What do we mean by a family? We mean to say that they are all equal in the sense that they are all generated by one cause, a patriarch, okay? Or the species of zebras. They're all traced back to an identical cause that is simply expressed over and over and over again in distinct particulars. But the underlying existence is really the same cause. And cause is definition, right? Cause is part of definition.
Could you tie this into the Adam?
Hold on. But by Adam, each Adam has Bechira to make himself, to choose to create himself in a certain sense. And although he's endowed with an ability, who he is really a product of his own behavior. And therefore, each Adam, who is Bishlei Muso, can no longer simply be considered an identical expression of one cause that just branched out. Because he is the cause of himself. Hein Adam, right? He says, Mimenu Lodas Tovara. Hein Adam Ke'echad. Mimenu Lodas Tovara. From within himself, he is his own prime mover. To use an expression that has more traction. And therefore, we can't trace who he is back to one identical cause. But I want to conglomerate all of the particulars, so that's good if I can trace them back to one cause. And I say, well, there's no distinctions, just accidental differences between them. That cause simply spread out into many manifestations. But this Adam, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, they have developed their own minds, and the perceptions they have only exist within their minds. Those perceptions, that's an important point. I think that's part of why he wants to start out showing you that the idea of that the reality of the species exists in the mind, because that's all ideas are really like that. All ideas only exist within the mind of the perceiver. And if the mind, and if the sum of your ideas is who you are, and that's your perfection, that only exists within each individual. And therefore we cannot say any universal notion anymore of man in the framework of a thinker. Okay? And therefore it must, but in terms of, so therefore, so to speak, each person is like Chazal say, each person is like a whole world. Because it's like he is a particular existence. And he can rise, as you say, Moshe is shackled to the Kaiser. But that doesn't mean to say that there aren't other frameworks that we can have a common existence, and that is an Am. So in the sense that we are all united under one common cause, or one common experience, or common goal and value, in that sense we can say there's a hashgacha to the Am as a whole. But the point I'm trying to make is hashgacha is going to work with regards to existences. God creates and creates existences. And to the degree that there is a reality to that existence, that's the framework of the hashgacha. The existence of the inanimate objects, their essence is the form as it is expressed in the group. That's the only, that's the tachlis, and that's the expressed existence of the creation. Okay, and as long as that continues to exist, that is the constant maintenance of the creation. God created the system of a physical being that will continuously transmit and express the tzura of the zebra. That system is a system that's in place, and okay. we can look at them all from beginning to end under one common indistinguishable chain, and the only distinction is which substance happens to be expressing the identical idea. Okay. But in that sense, all of those existences are just one. In a certain sense, God's hashgacha will relate to all of those expressions identically, because they are all identical expressions of the same surah. But when it gets to Adam, his das is a unique defining feature that makes each Adam an individual existence, to the degree that he actualizes his mind. And therefore, the hashgacha that relates to the existence of the mind is of necessity going to relate to each mind individually. And so too, if we extrapolate to the existence of the reality of Klal Yisrael, it will also have an expression of hashgacha to that group. But there has to be an existence, there has to be a something that's existing, a reality that's existing, and that is the way the hashgacha will be that's the way hashgacha will follow. So you got to look at the nature of each existence. Yeah.
What about men, so far as men
as species?
So far as the animalistic element.
So the man, so far as the animalistic element, that's the question the Rambam deals with in the beginning of the Pirush Mishnayos. Like why is that? Why does that species of man exist? the animal species of man. It's a funny question. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with that. You know, to keep the side of company and to all that other stuff.
Oh, that.
But
yes.
but that is like almost a different. It's almost like it's a different bria. But why does it exist? You want to know, or how does it? I mean, what is its nature?
I'm asking: is there separate from what we're saying that each man is his own existence,
right?
So far as he realizes his tzel melekim,
right?
Is that layered on top of a more underlying universal idea of species, similar to animals, such that there's a hashgacha on that as well?
Yeah, it seems so. It seems so. It does seem that's what the Rama is dealing with over there. Why is there a hashgacha to mankind, mm-hmm, to maintain that existence?
Right.
So you say that existence is necessary for the tzaddikim to emerge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
So I was thinking, like, there was that time
when... The question is, Bezman is there. We see extinctions.
Yeah.
We see extinctions.
We have a role to play in that.
No, even if, even without human intervention.
Yes. Even though human intervention. So you have to say we have to have a more abstracted concept of
what is animal kind? I mean, is that what, you know?
What we define in modern terminology and modern science as a species, not necessarily what the Torah had in mind.
No. We have to say that it is a life adapted to the environment. I mean, they had an idea of the species being fixed. What are we going to do?
Right. Just in case you know.
I mean, it's interesting. The Ramban holds, like, that's the reason, though. Like, the Ramban holds that's the reason for the Isser, like, Osav Espinoa Shluch HaKain. That we're not allowed to wipe out a species. And if you are allowed to take a mother and child and kill them, then that will facilitate could lead to destruction of a species, like the dodo bird, right? It would have had a little more. They would have had the Osav Espinoa over there. They wouldn't have shafted all the dodo birds and. And then also he holds the harkodiser of being of Markiv is not to monkey around with species. He's like, there are species here, that's the way they're supposed to be, and you can't make new species. I don't know what he would say now.
It's not breeding, yeah.
Right, what do we have? The mule? The mule is a crossbreed?
Yeah.
Is that
Tusser?
No,
it's Tusser.
That's an old one.
You're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to.
No, you're not allowed to do it.
It existed
in the time of Rambam.
No, I'm saying the Ramban knows it's possible. That's why he's saying the Isser. The Isser is not to try to make a new species. That would be like saying God's creation is not good. It's trying to make your creation. But now we know that is part of God's creation.
So the what do you
mean? No, the changing of the species. It's not like it's a fixed thing. He was saying he had the idea fixed.
Right.
If you're going to try to make something new, that's like you're saying the Bria is not perfected.
New species come about. They do,
Although they haven't really found new species come about. Right?
What about that? There was like a wolf.
No, exactly. Right. Klal Yisrael. You say there's a real existence of Klal Yisrael? Well, what I mean to say is apart from the individuals. Right? No, of course not. But it means to say, but what do we mean by Klal Yisrael? It means to say that there is something that is identical within all of these existences, all of these individuals are an expression of one underlying identical idea. What is that? Avo, Sinai, whatever you want to, Yud Gimel Karm, whatever it is you want to make to Bris Mila, whatever it is you want to make to universalize. But that would be a, but you'll say that's why all of these individuals will exist as one collection in a real sense. And therefore there can be a hashgacha to ensure that group continues to exist as a group. Not every individual, obviously, but the reality of that group. Yeah, you know, there's a